Welcome to The Credit Connection with High Tech Lending's David Brown, helping you get your finances in order and get you the credit you deserve. The Credit Connection, here on KSMA, 1240 AM, 99.5 FM, and 1240KSMA.com. Now, from High Tech Lending, David Brown.
Welcome to our show, The Credit Connection. I'm your host, David Brown, with High Tech Lending and American Senior Reverse Mortgage. At The Credit Connection, we want to connect you to the credit you want and deserve for your home, your business, and personal use. Here we discuss all things creditworthy, such as lenders, FICO scores, interest rates, credit cards, mortgages. You name it, if it has to do with credit or money, we'll discuss all the aspects. Think of our show as a financial literacy class with different topics each week. We really enjoy your feedback and questions that relate to credit. I encourage you to ask your questions through our website, reloans.com. Hit the Contact Us tab and leave us your question or comment. You can also call us at 805-686-2321. Today's program, we will share some actual lending and credit scenarios, and we're going to pull back the curtain regarding income tax issues with our guest, Bob Craig. Bob's an EA and expert on taxes, so we're looking forward to what he has to share with us. Here's some current credit scenarios affecting the credit markets and consumers today. I had a client approach me for the refinance of their loan because it was changing from an interest only to a 15-year amortization. The loan was over $800,000 and over a 6% rate, so you could see their motivation for getting it changed in a 5% market. They're self-employed and they needed to show income of approximately $15,000 a month for the debt-to-income ratio, or you've heard me say it before, the DTI ratios to work for the qualification. When the loan payment changes from interest only to 15-year amortization, they're going to see an increase of their monthly payment of nearly $3,000 more. They wanted a 30-year fixed rate only. They weren't willing to discuss anything else. The problem is that they didn't qualify for the 30-year fixed mortgage because of the DTI, and it would not allow it. So what is the solution? Using a reverse mortgage to fix this problem came about. We can refinance the current loan with a reverse mortgage, and because they expect no payment, they don't have a DTI ratio that is necessary to qualify. However, just because they don't expect a payment doesn't mean you can't make one. You can make a payment. We could pay all the same interest only or include principal at any time and have it act exactly like a forward mortgage with no prepayment penalty. Further, if business is complicated or competing for cash flow, you can skip one or more payments and not have a default as you would for not making a payment on a forward mortgage, regardless of the scheduling. So it would be a good workout for both their cash flow as self-employed and qualifying for such a large mortgage. We're going to move forward with that strategy using a reverse, and we'll have much more control over the cash flow and mortgage balance with this strategy. This is strategic planning and options that you'll never get from Quicken Loans or LendingTree, and why you should seek out professional in the industry for hard questions. Another scenario that came about was also for a refinance, very similar to the one I just shared with you, but his ratio income scenario was such that he needed additional income, and so he brought in a family member to help make up the debt-to-income ratio with using their income. Well, that's all good and well, but you have to take the good along with the bad. While the family co-borrower had the income to make the ratios work, which was great, he also had to use their credit score, which tanked the co-borrower option as the family member had a bankruptcy within the last 2 years and did not meet the seasoning requirement of the loan or the program. So it's back to the drawing board for that particular loan and borrower. Great idea, but we just couldn't implement it with the credit. Okay. Show me the money or credit, as the case may go. Let's get to the heart of today's program. Pull back the curtain on income tax strategies with Bob Craig. And give you a little background. Bob is has his own business. It's Robert Craig EA, Tax and Business Services. He does income tax planning, consulting, and preparation of tax returns for individuals, corporations, partnerships, LLCs, estates, and trust. He also specializes in tax problem resolutions if you get audited or have a settlement opportunity, businesses, wealth, and personal development, debt consolidation and counseling, personal and business finance consulting. Welcome, Bob.
Well, thank you, Dave. I appreciate you letting me come here and talk today.
Our pleasure to glean from you what is going on out there in the accounting world. And tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into financial tax accounting.
Well, I kind of stumbled into it. I'd been in business from my parents. They had a liquor store since I was 3 years old. I think I spent time in there. Always worked with numbers and money and paying bills and stocking shelves and doing inventories and things. And graduated. They sold the business and I moved up to Lake Tahoe and started taking accounting courses at the college up there and found it very easy and kind of interesting and sort of fun. So I kind of kept going back. I moved back to the San Fernando Valley and took more courses and went on with an accounting firm in Canoga Park and worked with him. He gave me everything he had. He threw the book at me. It was great. I was kind of felt naked out there with not knowing what I was doing at the beginning. Guided me right along, and I got to dig into just about everything, individuals, partnerships, corporations, and estates, and stuff that I had never even considered yet.
Baptism by fire.
It was thrown out there, but I was loving it and put in a lot of hours and worked for him for 10 years and bought him out. It was in 1993, and then sold that practice and moved the family up to Solvang. Started my own practice basically from scratch back in 2004 and been going great guns ever since. Loving it.
All the clients I've referred to, they've all had nice things to say and how great they'd love working with you. So I see that you're an EA, and I know EA stands for enrolled agent, and CPA is certified public accountant. What's the difference?
An EA, and it stands for enrolled agent, like you said, but I've got to make clear, I'm not an IRS agent. I'm licensed by the Department of the Treasury and the IRS, so I'm a federal license as opposed to a CPA, which is licensed by the state, and they have a lot more dealing with corporation accounting and reporting and corporate audits done for shareholders, banks, other entities. I do everything from a tax standpoint that a CPA does for the most part, but everything that we do for the EA examination and our continuing education each year is all geared, pretty much geared to taxes. And we do spray out in other areas just for a full rounded education experience. Basically, we deal with taxes. And so that's what an EA is. It's basically a tax expert.
But I understand that an EA also has the ability to negotiate or be part of the deal directly with IRS, like an attorney in a courtroom type of situation.
Right. Yeah. The enrolled is enrolled to practice before the IRS. Anybody can come to me, whether I prepared their tax return or not, and I could get obviously with the power of attorney, I can go in and represent them.
Okay.
With them there or with them not there.
Okay.
And I can represent them all the way up through tax examinations, audits, appeals, and up until tax court. I don't do a tax court.
Okay.
You have to be licensed separately for a tax court.
Okay.
And I'm not there, and I've never been to tax court, and I've done two or three tax court applications to tax court for clients who couldn't get their issues resolved, or they let the issue go and it blew it so they couldn't negotiate it at the IRS level. It always gets kicked back to appeals.
Okay.
And so it's back to the IRS, and so we finish it off.
Do you specialize in any types of accounting or tax? Is it individuals? Is it corporations? Or
I do them all. I do.
Okay.
I have 275 individual clients, which have, a combination of, they have businesses. Some are just a W-2 or a couple W-2s. Some of them are just a family with mortgage interest and property taxes, and goes all the way down to, rental properties and corporations, S-corps, C-corps, partnerships, LLCs, estates and trusts. Someone passes away or somebody creates a trust. I do those tax returns and planning for those as well.
That being said, have you noticed any trends over the past 3 years in the tax filings or businesses that are needing more help?
Kind of the trend, the thought process, was that things were going to get tougher for us because of technology and TurboTax and online tax preparation. And I just haven't found that to be true. Mm-hmm. My business has grown substantially in the last 4 years. Stuff that we thought, well, people go online and do it, and they do.
Right.
But I get a lot of those people that come to me next year saying, yeah, I got five notices from the government because something's wrong with my return. And they bring me, you know, a TurboTax printout of 95 pages.
Right.
And I figure out what was wrong, and then we fix it, and they go, okay, I'm not going on there again. That's great for some people. They don't know their situation. They don't know enough about what they don't know. I mean, I could fix my brakes. Pulled out the old Chilton manual and do that and go down there. But, you know, I never was sure it was going to stop when I hit the brakes, and sometimes it didn't. So I don't do my brakes anymore.
Okay.
But if somebody has a couple W-2s, I encourage them to do their own returns and see what it's all about. But, you know, the tax system has got so out of hand and complicated that even children in college are challenged to do their return. And because there's a lot of things that, and they don't have any idea. They go in, stuff in a couple W-2s and a 1099 and don't put them on the right lines.
Right.
And they don't know what it's supposed to look like. So it comes out, and hopefully it's right, but sometimes it's wrong and they miss something. Or the parents of the children, I just did some 4 amendments for a client that they didn't take any education credits.
Oh, okay.
So we got back, you know, about $7,000. Amending some returns, and then they said, well, I did my parents' returns. Will you look at that? They missed taking a deduction because one of the parents was in a home rehabbing Alzheimer's, and they just didn't know what they didn't know, and they didn't know, and that's, you know, there was $15,000 that was dropped on that.
Without being too specific, they made more than your fee 10, 15 times over, and then some. Yeah. Well, that's smart money.
It was
worth paying your fee
20 to 1, you know, something like that.
Yeah, that's what I look for. I says, okay, if I whatever my fee is, save me that much in taxes or cost or otherwise, we're even, and I don't have to do it. So
it's a return on investment.
Yeah,
at least you could feel that, you know, it was done by somebody who does this, you know, 365 days a year. And if something goes wrong, you got someone else, you know, what in the sling to.
Yeah. Right. Right. What is a typical fee for preparing tax returns and things of that nature? Is there a standard? Or
I generally will tell someone I'm not going to quote them a fee over the phone. I'll start out with that because I've been burned on that too many times. The typical answer is, oh, it's just a simple return, a couple of things. And they come in and they've got 4 rental properties.
8 schedules later,
yeah. So, but generally, you know, if it's a Schedule A, mortgage interest, property taxes, it starts out at about $275. I'll bring somebody in. They can sit with me for whatever it takes and tell me what they got, show me what they got, and I'll give them a ballpark on the way out. Generally, no charge, and they like the number, they can go with it. And if not, they've got it, they'll walk away with an education.
You're both well informed from that point forward. Yeah. What if you fail to file or pay your tax? How do you proceed? And now I'm starting to get notices or something along those lines. What's the next step?
Well, if you fail to file, first thing is file. Get whatever's filed. Generally, what I'll tell someone to do is bring all your notices, get them all together and bring them in, and bring me the last tax return that you've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had people come in with the last tax return they've done was 8 years ago, and they've got stacks of notices, you know, a foot high, and they're not opened. But the last one came with a green thing on it that said certified, and they had to sign for it. And so they think, oh, I guess I got to do something. The worst thing you can do is put your head in the sand. I mean, if you understand taxes and can understand the notices, open every one of them the day you get them. And if you don't understand them, call somebody that does, because the longer you wait, the tougher it is to resolve the issue and the more expensive it becomes for the client, for the taxpayer.
Yeah, because anything of this is added on penalties, and they compound on themselves too.
Mm-hmm. So I get a lot of them.
It's real expensive.
By the time they get to me, there's a series of letters that come in. And the last one is a 90-day letter, which says you have 90 days to petition tax court, or this is going to be a final assessment. And so by the time they get to me, the only option we may have is petitioning tax court, which is going to, you know, whatever it takes to solve the problem is going to be 10 times as much as it would have. Plus, if tax court accepts their thing instead of kicking it back to appeals, like I said before, then they got to go to tax court. Depending on the dollar amount, they may be able to represent themselves in a more relaxed court setting without all the formalities, right. Or if it's over a certain amount, I think that's $10,000 still, then they'll have to hire an attorney that's licensed to practice in tax court. So imagine what those fees are going to be.
Well, hey, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Bob Craig on tax strategies.
Mom, are you okay?
Honey, I'm fine. Just a broken glass.
Really? Are you okay?
I haven't been sleeping well since Dad, you know. I wake up at night worried if I can make ends meet.
Mom, why don't we look into a reverse mortgage? Then you won't have to make any more house payments and you can live comfortably.
Should I just call the guys on TV?
No, who knows where they're from? My neighbor recommended David Brown of American Senior. He'll come to the house and answer all our questions. Mom, call David at American Senior, okay? Here, I Googled the number 686-2321.
686-2321.
All homeowners over 62, don't worry about your finances. Call 686-2321. 686-2321. Get a reverse mortgage with David Brown of American Senior. David Brown of American Senior, a division of High Tech Lending licensed by the Department of Oversight under California Law Mortgage and Lending Act, NMLS 7147, CA 3413-0937.
If you're just now joining us, we are discussing income tax strategies with Bob Craig, our guest. And going on, Bob, what? There's a lot of scams out there that stating they're the IRS. I got a call, two calls last week. It was from a Pennsylvania number, and it said that they were Department of Treasury. I was going to be held on a warrant was sent for my arrest, and that I needed to call this 800 number. How will the IRS contact me if there is a dispute or an error on my returns?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, because there's a heck of a lot of scams out there with the IRS and also with utility companies and foreign countries saying that your nephew has been kidnapped and or is in jail and they want money. So it's not just look to the IRS anymore. The IRS will always contact you by letter first thing. You'll always get a letter from them saying, we've changed your tax return. You have 30 days to dispute the change, or we'll assume that it's correct. If you disagree with in full, partial, total disagreement, send us documents and information, and then we'll see, you know, they'll clear it up from there. They'll never contact you by phone first. It'll always be by letter. Now the IRS is actually contracting with some private collection agencies again. They did it a few years ago and it kind of got scrapped, but they're doing it again. And even though that's actually happening, there's going to be letters from the IRS that's coming out first that's going to tell you that they've referred it to this collection agency. And then you can go and verify the collection agency, because I think there's six of them that they're using. And so from that point, you can deal with them. And there's numbers and things that have to be verified by both sides. And so there's a lot of information. I haven't seen one yet in practice, but you know, if they think have committed a crime, you may get a visit from a criminal investigation department of the IRS, a CID with a badge. Never talk to them, get an attorney. If that ever happens, don't ever respond on a phone call for that, or utilities or anything else. Hang up the phone, pull out your utility bill, call them and ask them what the situation is.
What will the IRS do for collection of tax debt?
Oh, they have a whole arsenal of things they can do for collections, and from politely asking you for the money and all the way down to levying your bank account, garnishing your wages, putting liens on property that you own, all the way down to, you know, sending it off to a collection agency.
Right.
There's a number of things they can do, but there's a number of things to do if you are in a situation to where you owe them, is to jump on it quick. If you haven't filed a return, if you got notices and ignored them, that's the absolute worst thing you can do. Handle the returns, or, you know, handle the letters, open them up, see what it is, take it to somebody who understands them if you don't, and then deal with them and stop collection. Because once the further it goes, again, the harder it is to resolve and the more expensive it is to resolve, especially if you're paying somebody like myself or an attorney to get you out of it.
Well, let's say that it's built up and it's gone way out of control. I hear all these ads in the media, reduce my IRS bill for pennies on the dollar, tax advisor, and all kinds of different names. What's that all about? Are these legitimate companies? Are they making an offer and compromise to the IRS on your behalf? How do they work and get paid?
Well, they get paid up front. So it's a legitimate industry, but there's a lot of people out there that are that take advantage because it's like the ultimate scam business to
be in. They even put a floor on it. They say, don't if you owe more than $10,000.
Right.
So I don't know if they're looking
$10,000 is even too low because if I do an offer and compromise, we all get paid up front. I want $3,500 up front or whatever it is, depending on the size of the case, for a $10,000 liability. And some of these are charging $5,000, $7,500. And some of them are saying, well, it's going to be $5,000. And then 6 months later, they come back and say, we need another $25,000. Offering compromises are complex. Some people qualify, others don't. The thing to do is to find out. If you do it yourself, chances are it'll be rejected unless you really dig into it and know what you're doing. Even people that know what they're doing can't guarantee that this offer will be accepted. It's not. Oh, yeah. It's not like going to the car dealer and saying, "Yeah, you know, it's $30,000. I'll give you $23,000 for it." There's a formula, and it's mathematical based on the value of your assets.
Well, the ads always say, "You know, I owed the IRS $60,000, and I only had to pay, you know, $4,000 or some such thing." Make it really look good.
Some small print under there probably that says results not typical. And this person was paid to say what they're saying or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, maybe.
But there are $500,000. Somebody's 80 years old with brain cancer, renting an apartment, living on Social Security. If they offer the IRS $500, the IRS would take it in a heartbeat. There is no other chance of retrieving that money. It's not coming. So that's the whole idea of the offer and compromise. It's legitimate, but it's not like 10 cents on the dollar. It's not 25 cents okay. on the dollar. It's going to depend on
circumstances.
You may not even qualify because you can pay us off. There's a statute of limitations of 10 years on the IRS, 20 years on California, that if they don't think they can collect by the statute, the tax disappears.
Mm-hmm.
If you can, you know, run and hide for 10 years, you can get out of it. I'm not advocating doing that, but basically if they can't get you within 10 years and there's tolling things where that 10 years can actually be longer, then filing an offer and compromise is one of those.
Okay.
Because the clock will stop during that. So offer and compromise could be a dangerous thing, especially if you're 8 years into it,
right.
You had 2 years before the statute runs and you file an offer and compromise and it takes probably from a year to 2 years to get the offer and compromise done.
Negotiated, yeah.
And the clock stops. So what would okay. have expired in 2 years now is going to be 4 years before it expires if they reject the offer.
Well, we talk about IRS audits. How is it someone gets picked for an audit? How random is that? If it is it random? And then what do I do to prepare for that?
It's always good to prepare for it before you do the tax return. So you're ready for the audit.
Right.
If it ever happens. How they get picked is a lot of different ways. Every return is scrutinized and audited by technology. So when you get a W-2, when you get 1099s, there's all sorts of different forms that come out, K-1s, and the IRS computers are looking for those to match the ones from the employer, because the employer sends a copy of your K-1 to the Social Security Administration, then it goes to the IRS. All the 1099s, they have the same ones. So if they stick them on the return in the wrong place, you'll get a notice, you know, an audit, a right. correspondence audit notice saying, yeah, we were reported 10,000. You didn't show any, you know, so there's no, you go, oh, we put it over here. So, you know, you're dealing with them. So, you know, it's just knowing where this stuff goes and where the IRS's computers are looking for it. That's one way they audit. Others, there's a discriminant functions, income function system where they take every return based on the dollar amount, where you live, all these kind of industry you're in, and the computer will put it in there and spin it and assign a score to this return. Then yeah. it'll go to a surveyor who looks through all the papers and what the printouts are and whatever they got mm-hmm. and say, oh,
then they send
this
you
looks
the
okay,
letter.
Or yeah. let's go forward.
Okay. Well, hey, tell me, what was one of the most comical customer stories that you can share with us?
Well, I'd have to say, and I can't really say it's a customer story, but a client came in. This was back in the, I think it was the mid-80s, and He brought me his last year's return, and it had like six dependents on there, you know, digited all these different names. Now, this was in the days before you're supposed to put Social Security numbers on there and before electronic filing was a big thing.
Right.
You put a name and say this is a son, daughter, whatever it might be, and you send it in. And he came in, and I go, I need your information on your dependents. He goes, I really don't have any. He said, you had six last year, and you don't have any today. The sextuplets and graduated from college last year, and you don't get them anymore. And he told me, those were my dogs. And I said, you're kidding. And he said, no. And I said, well, first thing, you shouldn't tell anybody about that. But I've got to tell you, you need to go back and amend all your returns and pay back the taxes. And you're not going to be my client because I'm going to say goodbye to you there.
Bob, thanks a million. We're going to have you back. But for now, tell us, how can our listeners reach you if they have questions directly?
Hey, my telephone number is area code 805-264-3305. I've got an email as rcraig1044@aol.com. And website is www.solvangtax.com. That's SOLVANGTAX.com.
Well, thank you. We'll look forward to having you back again. I'm sorry we're out of time. Hope you found today's presentation informational and valuable. If so, please share with all your family and friends. For questions or comments, go to our website, reloans.com, and click Contact Us or call us at 805-686-2321. Leave us your comments and questions, and we'll get to them on next week's show. I'm your host, David Brown, with High Tech Lending and American Senior Reverse Mortgage. Thank you for tuning in to The Credit Connection, where we do the work and you get the credit. This is David Brown wishing you profit and credit worthiness. See you next week with another interesting credit concept topic.
You've been listening to The Credit Connection with David Brown from High Tech Lending. For more information, contact David Brown directly at 805-686-2321. That's 805-686-2321. Or by email at dbrown@hightechlending.com. dbrown@hightechlending.com. And visit David online at reloans.com. That's reloans.com. And tune in next time for High Tech Lending's David Brown and The Credit Connection here on KSMA.